I think before we begin this seminar, I'd like to get our thank yous underway so we see where the strength of what we've done has come from. I'd like to thank both the coordinator of it and the man on the machine on the left. And I think you've done a wonderful job, Howard. We feel the enthusiasm and the love, and we're very grateful to it. To everyone who's attached to in some form of preparation, it all moves smoothly somehow, and someone did it. Someone got behind it. And to all these invisible hands who have done things, I think gratitude is not only felt, but it is felt by us, but also by the one who has done it, that they feel our gratitude. I think all of us here are very grateful, too, that we have been able to give attention to one thing, and that's the message. Everyone else has kept in the background, and because of it, the message stands out a little clearer. So we all start with a full heart of knowing that everyone involved in this seminar has given their best. And the students have brought something very special. You know, the message, it's always wondered about the message. It doesn't always come from one single source. The capacity of the student to accept the message is felt before the message is delivered. And the capacity of the student has a lot to do with what comes into the class. If you didn't have the capacity to receive, there would be no impetus on this end to give it. So we're working together, and I think the results have shown that. So a giant thank you for all that you've done in preparing and making possible the spiritual message we received. A lot goes even deeper than the message. It's what the message does to you, your feeling for the message, of the message, and how you respond. And that response is already on the way. We feel it. We're grateful. We feel that today was an important day in the culmination of something we have started a long time ago. It's definitely brought us to another feeling of what the Spirit says to us. And I think this will continue in some way, in different ways, to each of us. I wish we could see each other 10 years from now to see what a difference. Living outside of time, as we shall be doing, can make. Some time ago, not far, there was a you, and it had a mortal name. It had a mortal body. It mingled with other mortals. And then a you began to develop, which stepped away from this you, this mortal image, and somehow, without eyes, you were heading for something called immortality. Away from it all. And yet it surrounded you, And as you walked into immortality, there were two of you. There was the mortal you and the immortal you. Almost side by side, one dwarfed the other. History was being made. Stepping out of reality, into reality from illusion, into a touch of the spirit from the material world. Finding self. I think we may have started on a degree of that and feel that we're moving correctly. I don't feel anything in the spiritual atmosphere which says we are making serious errors. We seem to be moving in a direction that has health in it, that has vision, that has purpose. And I think many of us can feel that we have definitely departed from an area of murkiness, a degree of inadequacy, into something strange, wonderful. Something that brings us closer to the Christ figure, enables us to say, I'm following you and you can't even cast a shadow between us. I like to feel that way. I hope you feel that way. And I think now we can get on with it, see what's to be done in our lives. There's something that demands expression, and it's coming forth now in such a way that I don't think it can be denied again. There's something that is saying, I am the immortal Christ, not fully realized, but I know I am, and there's nothing can deter me from the full extension of self into the spiritual world. There's enough momentum created in me to move me out of the illusion. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but it feels a lot more warm and inviting than struggling around in doubts about who, where, and what I'm doing. I don't have any doubts about it. I know what I'm doing. I can't put my finger on where I'm going, but I have a general sense of the direction. And I'm trying to speak for all of us so that we have enough started within us that we can look at the next hurdle, and it's not going to be much of a hurdle because we're facing everything with the knowledge that anything that's wrong isn't. It's strictly there to make me come over it so that I can benefit by the hurdle. Ready for anything. And that'll be some tough going. But we need every negative in our lives to make us find the positive. So now Christ's message is blossoming. We feel something that Christ has done which very few people suspected. Christ also did what we are doing. Christ dropped the sense of mortality and dropped the sense of figure, dropped the sense of everything in this world in order to attain what became known to us as Christ consciousness. All the mortal roots that had been engendered by living in this world were wiped out. Now he could say, you wanted to give me the kingdom in time. I rejected it. Instead, I have found the kingdom outside of time, where all is the divine will and expression. The strange thing about time is that it surrounds you. It surrounds you because you are an everywhere self and you're living in the finitude of life. When you step up to the infinity and find your everywhereness, there's no possibility for the things you've left behind, because time in various areas is one thing. But when you reach all areas of the non-terrestrial form, how can there be time here and time there, all different in your body, in yourself? It's one time, and the time is now. As you stand in the now, you eliminate all time. And that is what we are doing. Time is gone. Now is. And time does not contain the various qualities of God. You can't call on them automatically, have them come forth, mingle, and establish your consciousness. But when you're out of time, everything is working. Everything you are synchromeshes. In time, it all jumbles, lacks coherence, lacks force, and lacks one direction. Let's see what it is now to overcome the illusion of time a little more. We are getting rid of that thing called time sense, which really isn't time. We had a sense of time. And now we are pure. It's not 1 o'clock. It's not 2 o'clock. It's going to be the same time, which is no time. It will be an amazing thing to walk in no time, because you're so used to having someone tell you, well, we got to be there at 11 o'clock. And that, in turn, has an effect on everything you do. But in no time, you're going to find there aren't seasons. A flower doesn't bloom at a certain time of year. And all these things are very small. In this world or not, but in that perfect universe, they're so small that you can't find any of this degree of thinking. You're in a beautiful world, which is beautiful forever. We can't say enough about it. We can't say enough about how perfection will keep us in amazement. But it's going to be a long time before the world is into the one Christ, and there'll be a seeming appearance of many Christs, all Christ, all perfect, all exhibiting perfection in every possible way. I might say there's no money in heaven. Somehow we don't buy or purchase things we want and need and pay for it. The reason is that everything you need is automatic. But I don't want to get into the utopia yet. I'd rather we come to the understanding of things as they are rather than hear about them. Because that's part of the growth expressing itself. And your job is merely to stay within what you are. Be what you are. There's nothing else to be. And let the power of being what you are express what you are. Keeping all human hands off, knowing now on becoming spiritual every day. And there's nothing for me to add to it. It is the perfect kingdom. And it's perfect because I am in it. And he is in it. We are all perfect. I hope we're not bored with our perfection. We want to meditate now to say to the Father, we have tried and are trying to maintain, to attain every precept that you gave us. Perhaps in the recent months or earlier, you made a startling discovery. When something went wrong, you worked a long time, you thought a long time, you investigated it. You may have discovered that at the base of your problem was the fact that you were dividing your life between spirit and matter. You knew you were supposed to be spirit, and you knew you were not matter, but still the old wheels were turning on the material. Things you were doing were in the material world. When the problem finally hit you, it was too late for you to sit back and say, now, what is the basis of this? You're reacting to a material problem. What should you have done? How does one treat a material problem when one doesn't exist? So the idea is to find what it is and step out of it. And even though it keeps attacking you and you can't get rid of it, it's only attacking the material sense of you. And you finally find that the problem exists only because it has matter to attack. When you finally can see through it and release the idea of matter, that you are not matter, there is no matter in your life. When you can purify yourself of that belief, and even then invite the so-called devil to attack, there's nothing in you to attack. You can't attack a spiritual being. You can only attack matter. So the moment you feel something going wrong, remember, one part of you must be material. The thing that's being attacked, the thing that's reacting to the attack, or both. What in me is matter? I didn't know I had any left. But you go searching. Well, your reaction is material. Come to think of it, your entire problem began with a material problem. And one by one you face the fact that you're still a mortal living in a material world, and that's the reason you've got problems. This will go on and on until you finally are able, through habit of getting into a material consciousness, and then through effort to slowly dislodge yourself, to rise above it, and to finally be true to your identity. How can I, the Spirit of God, have a material problem? It's simple when you finally reach the conclusion, but until you do, you bear all the marks of a great war. If I have a problem, it must be the residue of my material consciousness. And if I am alert, I know how to counteract that by finding my spiritual reality to a degree, learning to live in it, and then finally making the decision that how can spirit be matter? How can matter be spirit? I am one, not the other. I must find the reality. I must finally decide that as spirit, I remain spirit. Because everything I do right up and down the line of life will depend on my decision. I am spirit. Always. The final analysis, smooth living, fruitful living, the attainment of a consciousness that is unruffled by storm, can only happen when you work at it on a daily basis. I would say on an interrupted basis, if you could. Let's look at our body. Let's transform our body. We have two bodies, one matter and one spirit. The material body is only a mental illusion. The spirit body is the only body. How do we keep out of the mental illusion? We scan every inch of that body. Do you know your own spiritual body? You can't see it. You can't touch it. You can only accept its presence. It isn't a dwarf like your human body. You can't run your fingers over the circumference of it. It's beyond touch, beyond dimension. Even getting a little pint of air through a lung, you see how ridiculous that is. When you live on air from the lungs, it's got to end somewhere. And yet we think we're hanging on a thread. We release ourselves from these foibles, these little facts that support a very limited way of thinking. Wherever we see limitation, we know that's not of God. Every limitation is not of God. When you can find that which is unlimited, you're talking God's language. How would you move into your business world with a spiritual consciousness that cleanses everything, sees what it sees, accepts it as what it is, and then goes beyond and lives at a higher dimension than what it sees, and does it consciously? This is your task, to see that you can break every block that appears to stand before you. Even a housewife will discover that her duties are spiritual. She has misinterpreted it down to a material sense of life. When you go for a glass of water, there's no water trickling through the kingdom of God. It's a very desirable commodity down here. You've got to see that you've got a glass of light. Everything you do bolsters your knowledge that you are the light living in the light. Slowly you allow yourself to feel that the world is transforming in front of you. It was once material in your eyes. You are letting it transform itself. Now when you come across big things, economics, country protection, things that are more than you, things that involve many people, you see them for what they are. They're all the invisible light. And as you stand in your consciousness that I am surrounded by light, you can feel within yourself something changing, something that seems to resemble a new consciousness, a new strength, a new level of yourself, something that's prepared to uplift everything around it. You're feeling like all of the surroundings are reacting to you. You're a force in every inch of it. You feel your omnipresence. It's very difficult to find an answering spiritual message in your own family sometimes. There seems to be an inability to respond spiritually. And at times it's made you feel helpless. That's the thing that you must learn will change if you live with it knowingly, if you take it into the light. A husband, a wife, a daughter, a son, all may be quite good people in your eye, but somehow you can't awaken something in them that seems to indicate they have another level of life. And though they are there, their spirit isn't there. I don't know how many families are completely devoted to the Spirit or only partially. But if you can awaken one more member of your family, you will find that the whole family will change. When a youngster in a family becomes illuminated, something about his indomitability, the way he carries himself, the way he looks at life, the way he smiles when other people are frowning, becomes a very infectious truth. It's very important for us to give much of our attention to the young folks among us, because they represent tomorrow on the earth, and tomorrow on the earth will have a realization of the light if you, instead of talking the light, see the light yourself, live in the light. And somehow those around you will feel and begin to cherish the difference. One man in an office can change the office. One person in a home. One person in the government. One is worth 100 in materiality. One feeling of light. We have a large area now. In every city, which you may not know is close to the light, which may appear to be fumbling in the darkness, which may appear to be criminal even, they are begging in their silent way for the light to enter their consciousness. They don't know that the light is what they are seeking. They don't know that the light is what is there. They only know that they are doing the best they can. And it looks horrible. it looks so horrible that makes even normal people repulsed. It seems that great dangers walk through our streets. That's because the light does not walk through our hearts. When the light is in your heart, there are no dangers. You smile at them. And they're puzzled because, what is this thing? Somehow, the bluff doesn't work anymore. That's the way you cleanse up the world. You can be 83 and doing your share of cleansing the world. Another boy can be 15 and so endowed with the capacity to live in the light that his life can be a virtual Christ life. It is our function at all times to make the world different, to stand fast with an understanding within, alive, that I am here to bring God's will into operation. I am the presence of God on earth. And everyone who knows it is the presence of God on earth. And we are an army. Not a punitive army. Not a warlike army. An army of love. And everyone who walks with the light, regardless of his age or sex, is going to find that it begins to shine in the consciousness of others. There's an infectiousness about the light. Its kindness, its love, is reflected, received, shines back at us. We make what we enjoy and don't enjoy. We make it by what we do. If you stand with the light in your life, your neighbor does, it comes back and feeds us all. I think I'd pause right now. We want to make sure that our last hour together is going to come into the light. And if we take 5 or 10 minutes, I'm sure we'll feel refreshed. Come back looking for the best and finding it. So let's take the time.